Welcome to our second evening of the London Satsanga. So, Emily asked me to speak about a couple of things. We spoke on Thursday evening, Wednesday evening. The days are going by.
Too much fun.
About yugas. There are four yugas, four ages in the universe. And Indian people pretty much know this.
Not all.
No, I know that. Just like there are four seasons here on the planet, in certain areas, there are four yugas or ages or epochs of that the universe goes through. Satyayuga, the golden age, Treta Yuga, the silver age, Dwapara Yuga, the bronze age, and Kali Yuga, the iron age. Welcome to the iron age. These are of great duration. Just to recap, the golden age is 1,728,000 years in length. People live for 100,000 years in the Golden Age. The Silver Age, Treta Yuga, is 1,296,000 years in length. People live for 10,000 years. And in Dwapara Yuga, the Bronze Age, it is 864,000 years in length. People live for about 1,000 years. By the way, the stature of people gets smaller and smaller and smaller. In the Golden Age, people would be easily 10 feet, 11 feet tall. They've actually dug up skeletal remains of people of that size. I think in Sri Lanka. What was that guy's name? Ghatotkacha. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the Ramayana.
Bhimasan.
And then as the ages progress, or shall we say regress, people get smaller and smaller. The Iron Age, Kali Yuga, it's 432,000 years in length. And people only live for about 100 years. But how many people do you know live to be 100? So we don't even do that. We've already rejected that. How far are we into the Iron Age that we've already rejected the lifespan? 5,000 years. We just got here. So we have 427,000 years left. The stature of humans, it says, will get smaller and smaller and smaller. In the predictions of Bhavishya Purana, different places, the size of the thumb. Now, whether you believe that or not, they're going to get real small. Real small. And girls will have pregnancies at younger and younger ages. In the Iron Age, it's known as the age of quarrel, disagreement, and hypocrisy. Have you noticed any signs of hypocrisy? No. People claiming to be one thing that they're not, putting themselves up as something that they're not. I've heard that one before, that siren. Yes, it is rampant in Kali Yuga. My guru, Bhaktivedanta Swami, when he spoke about government, he said the highest form of government is, and it's in the Vedas, is a monarchy. A monarchy. Not a monarchy, an enlightened monarchy. A monarch, one king, perhaps queen, but enlightened. Very hard to find nowadays. So instead of that, we've elected to do democracy, where every person has a vote. Okay, might not be a bad idea. Give everybody a voice. He calls that democracy. Why? Because, as you can see in Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, people go into politics. Some of them go in for a good reason, to represent the people and to fight on behalf of the people and do the right thing, improve things. But many of them are seduced by the power, the payoffs, because every politicians get the most generous pensions and payouts, because who votes those in? They do. But the interesting thing about a democracy is you've got so many people in ministerships holding portfolios of government agencies and offices for which they have zero qualification, zero education. Why do they get these positions? Because they're party favorites by whichever political party it is. It's great. Have you studied finance? Then maybe you can hold an economic or financial portfolio. If you haven't, then as you may remember, we had a financial crash in 08-09. They just ran away with it all. You know, where was the balance? Where were the checks and balances? So the main thing with politicians is get into power, stay in power. That's what you get in a democracy. Unless you've got enlightened people, which is very hard to find in Kali Yuga. So, in each age, there is a different dharma to be followed. So before we explain that, maybe we should quote a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter. Chatur varnyam maya shrishtam guna karma vibhagishaha. That's it. There are four divisions of society. Chatur varnyam, the varnas, social divisions. In India, over the course of many, many millennia, that system has become corrupted into what's commonly known as the caste system. The caste system means if you're born in a Brahmin family, I'll explain that, or a Kshatriya family, whatever family you're born, you are automatically qualified because you're simply born in the family. And therefore, people gain positions in society, professionally or whatever, for which they are not qualified. Again, we're saying the same thing as I said a moment ago, because in Kali Yuga, many of the systems in the Iron Age become corrupt, which is the nature of the age. So in that sense, we cannot be surprised. So Chaturvarnyam means there are four varnas. Chaturvarnyam, maya shrishtam, Krishna explains, Krishna being God in the Bhagavad Gita, as he explains the yoga system to Arjuna, his friend, his disciple. He says, maya shrishtam, created by me, by God. This is not something artificially created by humans to segregate or impoverish or disenfranchise a society, even though the caste system may appear so. That is not what has been created. Guna karma vibhagashaha, vibhaga, divided into guna karma. Guna means qualification, trait, ability, the guna. Karma is your karma, you know, what is going to come to you in this lifetime, what you can expect. So, the example given is, if a man is a high court judge, and he sits upon a high court judging people, and he's likely a Brahmin. We'll get to that. Does that mean his son is qualified as a high court judge just because he's born in the family of a high court judge? No. He may not have the guna, the qualification. He may not have the karma to go into law and then to be promoted to a judgeship. Right? So we know in modern world, we come from various families and various backgrounds. Some of our parents weren't educated at all. And we may be well educated. Or it may be vice versa. We can come from all different kinds of families, but in the modern era, to point out the good thing is, in a free country, you're allowed to study or you're allowed to reach whatever level or platform, or you can improve yourself in whatever way you want. You're free to do that. So that determines whether you have the guna or the karma to go into a certain area and do that job, be successful. So these four social divisions are important. Why? By nature, and you can see this historically if you study anthropology or history or any cultures, you will see that these four divisions of society are prevalent. So there you'll find many examples or many quotes about it in the Vedic mantra. Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. So Brahmins are priests, intellectuals, teachers, healers, advisors, counselors, ministers. That's Brahmins. It's considered to be the head of the universal man, of the, what's it called, Purush. Something Purush, it's escaping me now. Huh?
What is it, sorry?
The universal man, cosmic man, but there's something Purusha.
Okay.
Hmm? No. Purushottam is Vishnu. That means topmost Purusha. Yeah, maybe it'll come to me. Anyway, then we have the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas are the protectors, like kings, queens, army, police, rescue people, government. Those who organize, protect, look after the welfare of the citizens. Those are Kshatriyas. True warriors. You couldn't become a king unless you were actually a warrior. This is, for me, is quite entertaining. Because you can become the... when you're a prime minister or a president or somebody like that, you're effectively in charge of the armed forces. You can send men, women too, nowadays, off to war, and you can say who's going to get bombed, yet you never went into the army. You had no military training. You were never put at risk. You were never tested. But you can send others off. At least here in the UK, they all go into military, you know, in the royal family, they do. You know, whether you like the royal family or not, that's one thing in their favor. So, the protectors. Then, that's Kshatriyas. Then, Vaishyas are
traders,
business people, bankers, lenders, farmers, people who create economy, people who feed the people. And all the business that's done, all the goods, services, those kinds of things. So the Kshatriyas, I forgot to say, are the arms on the cosmic man. And the vaishyas, it says in the Purusha Sukta, are the thighs. Sometimes it said they're the belly, because they feed the people, the farmers. And then the shudras. The shudras are workers, laborers, craftspeople, service people, people who do all the other jobs, such as what? Plumbers, carpenters, builders, contractors. Now, and they're the feet of the universal man. Which of these four divisions? You know all these four divisions exist in every society. Yep. Right now, in the world, you'll find them, right? Which of these four can we do without if we're going to have a society, a civilization? Which one can we just get rid of?
None.
Yeah. Not possible. There's a fifth category that's not mentioned there, but is mentioned in different places, and that's the chandalas. And the chandalas are also sometimes called outcasts. In India, you get various levels of outcasts, as we know, commonly, nowadays. Here, too, we have chandalas are people who don't contribute to society. Now, I'm not talking about just simply the poor who receive welfare and support, because you have an element of that in society, too, and they must be looked after. I'm talking about people who don't want to do anything, no matter what, and don't want to make the contribution. But they're not one of the four major categories. Okay, why am I even telling you this? Because it's related to Yuga Dharma. That's why. In the Golden Age, the Sati Yuga, when people lived for 100,000 years, what was the Yuga Dharma? Yuga Dharma means what was, the spiritual practice for the age? What was the recommended spiritual practice, or religious, if you will, practice for the age? Dhyanam, meditation, and yoga, meditation. In Satyuga, the Golden Age, it was meditation, yoga practice, samadhi, which is the goal of meditation, to become fully absorbed. And it was easier because the whole mentality in the Golden Age was one of peace and promotion of goodwill and everybody looking after everybody. And there was lots of time. We weren't running around frantically. Then, so that was the Brahmin era. That's as close as you would get to heaven on earth, is the Golden Age. So let us remember that after Kali Yuga, the one we're in now, this is Iron Age, the Golden Age is next. After winter comes spring. We're in the winter now. It's an endless cycle. A Mahayuga, four of these taken together, gold, silver, bronze, and iron, is a total of 4,320,000 years. One cycle.
So if the Earth is 4.5 billion...
Says who?
Well, according to science.
Yeah, until they come up with a theory and then they dash it about 20 years later and bring in a new theory. You just check out the history on that. That's what they do. I don't really care what they say about that. It's not the source I go for.
No, but what I mean is how many of those Maha...
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, if Brahma has... 100 of those is Brahma's day.
Mahayuga.
No, 1,000 of those, yeah. Mm. Yeah, Mahayuga is Brahma's day. Mm. And Brahma lives for 100 years. Mm. So, Brahma's the creator who lives in Brahmaloka, the highest planet in the material world. So we can't even fathom. You know, if we're here, we're going around like this, so to speak, at the pace that we're going. You go to the higher planets, it's moving at this pace. It takes, us, we're going around and round and round at this speed. And Brahma's gone in a very, very slow, measured pace because his reality is completely different.
You had many Mahayugas before?
Many, many. Many.
So this whole topic, we are going to destroy the earth and living
on. No, this is nonsense.
We can't destroy.
Right now, in a day of Brahma, one day of Brahma, we're at noon. We're about noon in the grand scheme. So this business about the earth being destroyed and they're going to blow it up with nuclear weapons and they're going to pollute it beyond any shade of recognition is laughable. That's not going to happen. The one thing you need to bear in mind is you have to meditate on your father and your mother. Your father is God. Your mother is the earth. And they will not betray you. They will not neglect you. They will not let them prey upon you. Not saying that doesn't happen to some extent, but it won't go into annihilation or oblivion. No one is as powerful as even the earth, what to speak of God. We mentioned the other night, look at Angkor Wat in Cambodia, this beautiful temple. That was a Vishnu temple. It was never a Buddhist temple. It was a Vishnu temple. And all of the iconography, etc., it's all Vishnu iconography. Even today, who's worshipped in Cambodia, Thailand, Laos, Indonesia, Lord Ram, Ramayana. It's just rife through the entire culture. If you go to these places, you can see it all, the iconography. Anyway, the point is, Mother Earth grew her jungle and completely swallowed up the Angkor Wat temple. No one ever even knew it was there for the longest time until, I think it was a Western guy who went in there and discovered it or rediscovered it, and then they began to remove the trees and the forestry. And Mother Earth will always renew herself. How amazing is the physical body of a human being at regaining health and renewing itself? When you rip a hole in your skin, for example, do you sit there all day and all night long meditating on how to mend this thing? I don't think so. Not consciously. But there's some part of you that's busy working on that the whole time to bring it back to a state of wholeness and health. Correct? You think it's different with Mother Earth? Not for an instant. Don't worry about what all these crazy people are doing. Keep yourself out of harm's way as far as you can. But don't. This is ego. These kinds of things are examples of inflated ego. I'm so powerful here and here in the divine and demoniac nature in Bhagavad Gita. Today I'm so powerful, I have so much power, I have so much wealth. Tomorrow I'll have even more power and wealth. People become drunk. There's a fever, they call it gold fever. People lose it. Power, lust for power. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Okay, so Satya Yuga, Golden Age. The Yuga Dharma is yoga and meditation. Brahman. in Treta Yuga, Silver Age, the Yuga Dharma is? No.
Sacrifice.
Agni. Agnihotra. Yajna. Yajna is Vishnu. So what is a sacrifice? The sacred fire ceremonies, and there are many kinds that they use. They build the sacred fire, the peat. The oven, the peat. And there the Brahmins use chant mantras, the priests chant mantras to invoke the gods. They can be directed at different personalities depending what they're trying to achieve. And the mantras will be specified mantras, some human didn't sit around and make up the mantras. Vedic mantras are eternal. They come from Shruti. They're all there in the Vedas, which for millennia and millennia was a oral tradition. It wasn't written down. Well, that's strange. Didn't these people know how to write? You'd think they would know how. They didn't write because their memories, all they had to do was hear a thing one time and everybody would have committed it to memory. So why sit around writing? So finally, they were put into written form in Sanskrit. And having studied Sanskrit, having been a professional Sanskrit editor and worked on most of Prabhupada's books, when you find the different versions of similar mantras or similar stotras or prayers or stutis, etc., and Puranas and the various texts, if there are differences. Now, I can say this from, direct experience. If there are differences, the differences are always very minimal. The odd word. But the meaning is consistent. That's been my experience with it. Because if I saw, for example, there's about extant now in the Western world is maybe at least 60 translations of Bhagavad Gita. I think there's probably more. Now, those 60 translations of Bhagavad Gita, the English or whatever language they're translating it into could be way different in meaning, in intent. But if you read the Sanskrit mantra, it's the same in all of them. That's my point. Okay. So, back to yajna. These sacrifices, this was the Kshatriya Age, Treta Yuga, Silver Age. Same age that who appeared in the Silver Age? Lord Ram. Sita Ram. Ram and his brother Lakshman. And of course, the monkey god, as they like to call him. He's not a monkey, he's a Vanara. Vanara is no monkey. He is a highly, highly educated, literate, multilingual, advanced being, Hanuman. And you see, everybody loves Hanuman. And Hanuman is ubiquitous in many Asian cultures. You'll see Hanuman. You can call him monkey god if you want. Hanuman's father was who? Which demigod?
Pavan Putri.
Who?
Yes.
Yeah.
Bhavan.
Bhavan.
Pavan.
Oh, Pavan. Pavan. Yeah, Pavan. Vayu.
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 Yes.
Yeah. Wind god.
Wind. Yeah.
Wind god. Powerful movement. He leapt from continental India, Rameshwaram, over the sea to Sri Lanka. Jumped. Kind of a jump. So, Treta Yuga, Silver Age, these sacrifices promoted by the Kshatriya, the warriors, the governors, the kings, the Age of Kings, if you will, these were very elaborate affairs. So much money, because so many ingredients were needed, so many priests chanting all these different Vedic mantras simultaneously, kind of on the outskirts of the yajna, and then the main mantras, and then the main priest pouring the purohit, pouring the ghee into the fire with the mantras, you know. Om Shrim Swaha, like this. Tribute to our, to Goddess. So that's what they did in those days. A lot of money was spent, and it was all spent for the welfare, generally for the welfare of the citizens of the kingdom, or whatever. You can have your own personal yajnas. Most of the Dashavida Sangskaras have yajnas. Maybe I should tell you about that. There are sangskaras. The soul, while embodied in a physical body, because of thoughts, words, deeds, creates karma. And karma are explained, there are sangskaras or impressions upon the subtle body. Sukshma Sharira, and we explained the other night, what is the subtle body? Three factors. Umarappa nalo vayu mano buddhir eva cha ahankar. Manas, mind, buddhi, intelligence, ahankar, ego. Correct? We have impressions. We have imprints. We have conditioning, right? We talked about cleansing the mirror of the mind, because the mind is covered in dust from all of these lifetimes of impressions. We become affected by everything. We hear a song on the radio, for example. Next thing you know, you're walking down the street, singing the tune, humming the tune. Yes? And sometimes you don't even realize, I'm humming that too. What? Oh yeah, I heard that on the radio. See how susceptible we are to impressions. And we are bombarded, my friends. We are bombarded in this age by all these impressions, right? So in order for a person to become qualified to for spiritual life, one must undergo the sangskaras, the purification processes. In the Catholic Church, what do they call these? The sacraments. So in the Vedic system, they call them sangskara, because sangskara means impression. But sangskara also means to cleanse, to purify. So to purify the mind, the psyche, from these impressions that one has accumulated. Before Jatakarma is Garbhadhan Sangskara. Garbhadhan Sangskara is when you place the semen in the womb. You do fire sacrifice. You do your mantras. You do certain rituals. Then you place the semen in the womb at the right astrological time. This is why yours truly began to study astrology, for this reason and this reason alone. Because once I studied Sanskrit, I became aware that you can use, first of all, I became aware of sangskaras, then I translated the sangskaras from Sanskrit into English. And then my wife and I, we're both on a spiritual path together. We wanted to bring higher beings into the world. Because that's what the Sangskara of Garbhodan said you could do with the right mantras, etc. But you needed to know when to do it. You needed to be able to calculate it astrologically. So I didn't know astrology, Vedic astrology. So I had to learn that. Because that was the missing ingredient. So I learned that. And that's what we did for our two children. We did all of the sangskaras. So Garbhodan, placing the semen in the womb.
But you can fall pregnant any time.
Sorry?
How do you know it's the exact time?
You don't know. No, you don't know. But you can. You got a 15-minute window of placing the semen in the womb. How do I know when the semen reached the egg? I have no idea. I only know this much. You know. How are we going to time it? Put a watch on them. Can't do it. But that's how it's done. I don't know. We just do everything according to the best astrological influences. And you have done the prayers, the ceremony, the ritual, the sacred fire. I did this. I did many sacred fire ceremonies. Then Jatakarma, when the child is born, before the cord is cut, there are mantras to, and then you put gold on the tongue, gold and barley. Then you cut. You cut with, I can't remember how we did it. It's supposed to have a golden razor. I could not afford a golden razor to cut the cord. They wouldn't let you do it anyway. So sterilized. You know. Name giving ceremony. Namakaran. So you do that anywhere from 10 days after the birth. Sometimes
the name chosen based on the moon position.
Yes, so the name is chosen based on astrology, number one. You're right.
Okay.
So based on, first you have to calculate the astrological chart of the child. How do you know who you got?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. But the horoscope, the astrological chart, will show you who this person is, believe me. I've been doing astrology now 39 years. It will show you. People say to me, "Well, Jerry, I think I'll have my kids' charts done." I said, "Well, that's a good idea. How old are they?" "I think maybe they're too young, 15 and 16. Too young. "Well, when should I do it?" "When they're 10 days old." "I think they're a little old." That's what I'm teasing, you know. She should have started sooner. So the astrology chart will show you the traits, the inclinations, the qualities, so many things about the child. What Mohini was saying, and is correct, we look at the moon. In Western astrology, sun is the active principle. It's solar based. That's, you know, I don't even use these terms myself, but Narayana and Sayana. Yeah, so I haven't talked about this for a while. Okay, anyway, it's solar based. In Vedic astrology, it's lunar based. The moon is the radical planet. So it's all about the moon. Why the moon? Because the moon is the mind, and the mind reflects spirit, or it reflects matter. We talked about this. So, you know, if I say to you, "How are you today? How are you feeling today?" It's less about your body that I'm talking about. What am I talking about? Your state of mind. Huh? Mental outlook. "Oh, I'm having such a good day." Are you? I can see it on your face. You're happy. You're positive. And somebody, "Oh, God, what a day." You want, "Well, did somebody beat you up?" No. I'm having nothing but problems. Nothing seems to be working. Or what do people say? "I should have stayed in bed this morning. I shouldn't have got up." You know.
So I have a question about astrology.
Yeah.
My grandfather was a big believer in astrology. So was my sister. And she went to many astrologers. And she passed away in a road accident. And I always question after that, if nobody ever tells you that you're going to die. They tell you you'll live for so many years and this and that. And then she just passed away in a road accident. Nobody ever predicted that. Nobody ever saw that. And I'm not saying...
Well, you know, there's different ways to answer that question. Some of them may have seen it.
And not spoken about it.
No.
Because of her mind, she may not be able to take that information.
But then why do they say that you're going to live and you're going to have children and you're going to get married? That's misleading the person.
How old was she?
21.
They told her when she died?
So before she died, a lot of people told her that
she died at 21.
Yeah.
Oh, you should have been able to see that.
And that is why, I mean, like, because obviously I've grown up with astrology.
Yes, well, let me explain like this now that you've said this. The astrologer can see what he can see. He cannot see what he cannot see. Do you understand? No one can see everything. Only God. No one can see what they're not allowed to see as an astrologer. What I see, I can see. I cannot see everything. It's not possible. If I could, I'd be God. And I'm not God, I assure you. Same is true for another astrologer. But I could also argue that maybe the astrologers weren't any good. Or another argument is, oh, they saw it all right. But they don't want to say. It's to tell somebody they're going to die at 21. Can you imagine? And other people will complain. They will take umbrage with that. They will object to that and say, why are you planting such an idea in my sister's head? How dare you? They say that too. You're making it a foregone conclusion. Now she's going to start meditating on this from now on. Of course she's going to get killed at 21. It's your fault. You put the idea in her head. Self-fulfilling prophecy. You see, there's many answers to that question.
And also, could you also say that some parts of the chart is fixed? So some of the karma is fixed.
Some karma is fixed. Some karma is mixed. We can go one way or the other. And some karma you can avoid entirely. Correct.
So perhaps maybe that could have had some
influence on... Absolutely. In her state of mind at the time. What's it say in the Bhagavad Gita about karma? Anishtam, mishtam, mishram, cha. Three kinds of karma. Anishtam, undesirable. Ishtam, desirable. Mishram, mixed. Some karmas you cannot avoid. Some you can avoid. I tell my clients all the time, have for years, sometimes in India, people are very fatalistic. This is all there is. There's nothing you can do. That's finished. I don't believe that for a moment. Yes, I know there's some karmas are fixed. But I know for a fact that people can learn their lessons and they can grow beyond difficulties, behaviors, beliefs, imprints. They can grow beyond it and learn the lesson and change karma and come out better people. I mean, this is evolution. This is why we're here. So you can't disempower people. One thing you don't know looking at charts and doing astrology is, you know, I can say, now this period could be, somebody will say to me, oh, you did my chart 2 years ago, and you said this and this, and it was going to be a good period. And that was the worst period of my life. Okay. And what did I tell you to do when we spoke? Well, you said do this, this, and this, because the spirit's coming up. And what did you do? Did you do those things? No. You make no effort to change the karma. You make no effort to learn the lesson. You make no effort to evolve. You just want it all to be handed to you. And then, you know, it was a terrible period. You were wrong. Okay, I'm happy to be wrong. I don't care. That's not a big issue to me. I don't need to be right all the time. I just need you to grow. So I got to figure out a way to help you do that. That's how I see it. Okay, so I was just finishing on the moon.
You told that story once about one of your clients who had the plane crash.
John Denver.
Yeah. And you saw in his chart. But you didn't, you just saw it was a K2 period. It was very...
No, I told him.
But did you know it was going to be death? It was...
Yeah.
Did you know when, roughly?
Yeah.
Can you tell the story just about?
I got a call. I lived in L.A. for years. So I got a call from one of my clients. He says, I'm in town with John Denver. I'm his masseur. I said, oh, yeah. He says, yeah, we're at the Beverly Hilton Hotel. Good. He said, you know, you did a concert last night. I said, yeah, I heard something about it. Would you come and do this chart for him? I said, yeah, I don't really do house calls. People come to me. I don't really drive there. Oh, well, could you do it for John? I mean, I got lots of big stars, you know. So, well, they can come to my house, especially if they live there.
Did you enjoy it?
Huh?
Did you enjoy famous people, like, doing their shots? Like, really?
Well, I don't enjoy it more or less than anybody else. They're people. I only, you know what I enjoy it? I enjoy it when I get through to people. And when I don't enjoy it. Mostly I enjoy it. Whether they're famous or not, it's neither here nor there, really. They're people, they're vulnerable people like the rest of us. You know, it's what they are. And it's good. You have to see them on that level. You can't get blinded by fame. You can't help them when you're seduced by some persona that's been created. Yeah, and, you know, God bless them. That's their karma, but it has nothing to do with anything unless it's a problem we're discussing, then okay. So he says, well, could you please come? Because it's going to be, you know, there's an entourage and there's this and there's that. And, oh, okay, I'll come. So I went. So I knock on the door. He opens the door. And I said, John, I'm Drew Lawrence. I've come to do the Vedic chart for you. He goes, far out, man. Come on in. Wow, great to meet you. He is just the sweetest guy you'd ever meet. I wasn't a John Denver music fan. It's not, I didn't not. You like his music? He is just sweetest guy you're ever going to. I loved him instantly. We just hit it off. So, he is. He's very humble. He was the real deal. Genuine. That's what I liked about him. I've had the other kind too, you know. Do you know who I am? I don't. You never heard of me? Where do I know you? Should I know you from? And I wind him up a bit, you know. Anyway, so John and I are sitting there and we're doing the chart. I said, John, you're coming into... the reason I'm talking about him in front of you is because he's no longer here. If he was here, I wouldn't be talking about any of my clients' charts in front of anybody. I would, but not ever mention their name. You know, I would never do that. Betray confidence. So I said, John, you're going into a major period of K2. In your chart, doesn't mean everybody's major period of K2. By the way, for those of you listening at home, this does not mean any major K2 period.
Sorry,
K2? K2 is a planet in Vedic astrology.
In which?
It's a south node of the moon.
Oh, I see. Sorry, yeah.
Shadow planet.
Okay, got it.
Shadow planet. Do you know the nodes?
Nodes.
South node.
Okay.
Shadow planet. Chayagraha. So I said, you're in a major period, or you're just coming into a major period of K2. It's a very dangerous period for you. It was in the seventh house. I said, what's going on? Do you have any legal issues? Do you have any legal challenges? Yeah, I'm going through a divorce with my wife. Oh. As if I didn't know. I said, how's that going? Because I know how that's going. It's horrendous. It's probably as bad as it gets. Not good. My wife is using our daughter as the pawn. And whether I get to see her or not, that happens. And he just adores his daughter. So, no, for sure. That's how you get him. And I said, it's very important you don't get overwhelmed with anger in this period. Because the danger, I said, there's real danger here. I mean, serious danger. I said, whatever you do, do not bungee jump. Do not climb steep mountains. I don't know, whatever I said, you know. Don't do any of these things. He said, do not fly planes. I said, well, I know you. I said, what do you mean, flying airplanes? I know you got to go here and go there. I know you're going to do that. No, no, no. I have my own plane. I'm a pilot. Oh, I said. Well, I'm not really going to be able to tell you to not fly your plane for the next 7 years, am I? He said, no, you're not.
Is that what you were telling him?
Yeah. This is my conversation with him.
But he shouldn't be flying at all.
Yeah, but you can't tell a man that who's a pilot who owns a plane.
So he could have just gotten another.
Knock it off. Knock it off. No. This is what he does to enjoy himself.
Yeah, but he could have just gotten a plane to go to another country to whatever, and it could have been.
The plane goes down.
Yeah, the plane.
Oh, yeah, sure. But then he'd have to be involved in a collective karma situation, which he wasn't. Then it brings in the eighth house in the chart. Collective karma.
What was it?
I don't remember. I'd have to look it up. It's too long ago. So, I talked to him a couple more times because he'd be doing updates with me. And we had a really good relationship, and we were sort of monitoring the divorce process, etc. He had some new project he was working. By then, he was a real successful actor on screen. He was in a lot of big, big movies. He was really good, too. Yeah, that's kind of how I appreciated him in the movies. But he had some nice songs. Anyway. So then I'm driving down the street one day in L.A. and the news comes on the radio that John Denver has crashed his plane in the Pacific Ocean off, Santa Barbara or someplace. And he's dead.
Was he flying alone?
He was trying out a plane. I found out this later. He was testing a plane that he was thinking of buying from this guy. So he took it up and he flew around and then he brought it back. The guy told him whatever he told him and then he brought it back down. He's landing because a lot of times, you know, they don't gas up the plane just for a guy to go for a little spin, you know, just like they do at a dealership with a car. Put a little gas in it, a little fuel. Then fill up the tank. There's no need. So then he was landing the plane. He just said, oh, I'm going to go up again. I'm going to give it tower, going up one more time. He ran out of gas, ran out of fuel. The plane went into the Pacific, and that was that. It was his K2. I can't remember the minor period, but.
Because K2 is reactionary, it's reactive, explosive.
Explosive.
So he's carrying anger and resentment about.
Well, he's definitely carrying that.
So, is that what. Activate.
Yes, it's karma, but my experience is you also need a immediate or efficient trigger of what's going on in your life now. These two things meet up. It's your karma. It's a karmic potential. Now, you can look at it, a period like that, and say, K2, in the seventh house, accident, injury, surgery. That's what I tell people. Accident, injury, surgery. And probably emergency. Where you're going to be in an ambulance, they'll be taking you someplace. That's most likely it. At the far end of it. Okay? Well, if I bang my knee on the side of this fireplace, that's an accident. I'll get a bruise. Right? That's K2. So, which, bang my knee or wrap my car around a pole? I'll take this. I'll take the minimum. The planetary periods in Vedic astrology is your soul's schedule in this lifetime. It shows you exactly how your karma is unfolding, if you know how to read it. There are many, many, maybe not hundreds, but many, many K2 periods. It's not only K2. We're only using K2 as an example. We're unfairly picking on K2 here.
Also, there are other...
Oh, yeah, Rahu, Saturn, Mars. There's plenty to go around.
I know, when I end, I think this Mars, you say that? That's
your Mars?
18 years.
Oh, you're his Rahu, yeah.
I've got another 2 years. I've
got another 7, 8 years.
See, they're all cheering at the end of their Rahu period. Can you imagine? These people.
Mine's in March or...
I don't know. I'm supposed to know often.
There are ways to counter it, as the Chinese would have ways to counter the negative forces.
And we have too.
You wear certain things.
Yeah. Well, the Chinese guy, where do you think they got their system from? It all comes from India. Everything comes from India. It's a fact.
Oh, it's
going to
be ego talk.
Well, I'll leave that to you guys. That has nothing to do with me. I'm not Indian, so, you know. I'm as neutral as it gets. I mean, okay. So, we were talking about sankskaras. We were talking about the moon. The moon is in a certain constellation. There are 27 constellations according to the Vedic system. It is the constellations, you know, like Orion and Cassiopeia. I don't remember them all, but you know what I mean. Big Dipper, Little Dipper. But they're not divided the same way, and they're not named in the same way. And each constellation is of 27 is 13 degrees 20 minutes in length as you circumscribe
nakshatra
as you circumscribe the circle of the cosmos. And there are three divisions of constellations: Deva, Nara, Rakshasa. 9 constellations in each division. Nara is human, or sometimes they say manushya. Deva is divine, godly, enlightened, more evolved. And Rakshasa is literally demoniac, but it's, you can't jump to the conclusion that somebody who has a Rakshasa constellation, this is a demon. No, not like that. It's a person who perhaps has not evolved as much and would be more inclined to perhaps be manipulative or controlling or less than forthcoming, for example. They need more improvement on the evolutionary scale. But you can find many spiritual people that have Rakshasa constellations, by the way. Many. We need to be clear on that.
So it's very complex, isn't it?
It's very complex. There's so many. There's so many things that right there. I mean, that's just the nature of the Vedas. The Vedas are very complex. They're so comprehensive. You know, frankly, the Indian people as a culture, it's a Brahmin culture. Not everybody in India is a Brahmin, but it's a Brahmin culture. Look at how many highly educated people come out of India. Thousands of them, millions of them come highly educated. And the only thing I see that's comparable to that would be the Jews with their level of education. I would even say the Persians to some extent. Maybe different numbers. The Persians also a very rich culture. And Armenians might be another example. You know. Anyway. So each constellation is divided. Each of the 27 nakshatra constellations is divided into four padas, four sections of 3 degrees, 20 minutes each, as measured in the cosmos. And each of these padas has a sound vibration, a syllable. Like, you know, you know, the Sanskrit alphabet. So it goes. Kaka gaka. And recommended that you choose whatever that syllable is, that's the baby's first syllable of the name. That's what I did with my oldest child. Second one, no. Well, not all of them you can... They don't work. They don't all work. You know, you can't find a... You can't find a name that is always suitable. You might be able to find a word, but you may not... It may not suit as a name. So... But you can still name the child according to the karma and the guna. Pardon me, the nature, the bhava of the person, according to the chart. All right. So, boy, we got off on a wonderful tangent. Great. You see, you never know which way it's going to go. So, what's it mean? So, the sankskaras are done with fire, sacred fire ceremonies. Not all of them, most of them. So I tried to do all of as many of those as I could for the children. That was the idea. And in India today, it's less common now, but still, it is done. It is still done. Okay, so we were only on Triti. We were only in the Silver Age. The Bronze Age, the Yuga Dharma for the Bronze Age is... You said it. Temple worship. Now we got Vaishyas. This is the merchants, the traders, the business people, the bankers, the lenders, the farmers. This is now there. Now it's splashing out the cash and having the murti.
And the consciousness is decreasing through
the consciousness is decreasing. From one yuga to another, always decreasing.
That's why we
and they're becoming more materialistic each time around, successively. Then, now we come down to Kali Yuga. The lifespan of Kali Yuga is very short. People are not inclined toward religious practice. There's so many predictions of what's going to happen in Kali Yuga. There will be no churches at some stage. They'll all be gone. Right now, you see in Catholic Church, they're shutting all the doors. No one comes. No one, I think in all of Ireland, the Catholic country, they had 5 people putting in to be priests last year. 5. And that's all about this child abuse, sexual abuse that they've done rampantly throughout the world. What, in the name of what? God. Now, I don't want to say that Catholicism or Catholic priests are the only people who do that stuff. Lots of people do that stuff, so let's just say that. It's not right. It's not good. It's more rampant now in Kali Yuga because it's a symptom. You corrupt the children. Let's figure out ways to corrupt the children. When a child is abused in childhood, that soul's life is ruined, effectively. Some people recover depending, but virtually that soul's life is ruined. Because most of them can't function properly after that. They can't lead a so-called normal life. Unless they can come out of it, and you can come out the other end. I mean, I know. I've heard all the stories. Believe you me, I could tell you stories. But I won't. So, that's ruining lives. That's what it is. Can't get free of these cards, though.
What's the prediction? The end of Kali Yuga and beyond?
Well, then Kalki comes. God takes an avatar as Kalki. Behold the pale horse, it says in the Apocalypse of the Bible. It's Vishnu coming on Kalki, as Kalki, on the white horse. That's where it comes from. And removing all of the detritus in the form of humans from the face of the earth.
Does that mean that every human will become...
Almost every human will become a dark figure. Yeah. Not all. There's always some that don't.
Most.
Most. The vast majority will.
Does it mean like we'll become like animal, like move back to our animal instinct?
Yes. Do you not see that already?
Yeah. No, I do. We saw one today.
Who did?
You did.
I saw. Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Correct. Yeah. So the Dharma of the age for Kali is a mantra. Ajanu lamita bujao ganaka vadato. Sankirtana kapitaro kamalaya taksho vishvambaro jijavaro yugadharma palo vande jagat priyakaro karuna varadharo. God takes the form of the Karuna avatar, the incarnation of mercy, and brings the simple chanting of the holy names. Simple mantra. Who can do it? Anyone. Child can do it. Sing, dance, chant. Very simple. Because people don't have time, they're too busy, they're too distracted, they are overcome by so many problems. They don't have the energy. They can't be bothered. Okay, here, this is just chant. Easy. No qualification necessary. You don't need the money to have an elaborate sacrifice. You don't have to even go to the temple, because temples will disappear before long. You don't have to go to the temple to see God in the temple. Is God in the temple? Yeah. God's in the church, in the temple, and in the mosque. Yeah, God's there. Well, God's everywhere else too. You don't have to go there. You say, well, I don't want to go there. People used to go to church. You know, I was raised in the West. People go to, we go to church every Sunday. I mean, you just went to church. You did not go to church. Well, it was Catholic. People don't go to church on Sundays. Football's on. Are you kidding me? Go to church. You don't need to go to church. Just chant. And it's Sankirtanaika Pitaro, which means congregational chanting, chanting together. It's more powerful when you chant with somebody than by. It's good when you chant by yourself, which of course you can. But when you have a group, it's more powerful. We have a group consciousness then.
So, in the age of Kali, from my understanding, is that our thoughts will not produce any karma. So, we can kind of get away with having.
That's right. You're right.
So and that's just in Kali, whereas the other yugas, we would get karma for our thoughts.
Yeah, I was explaining that to somebody the other day, and it said that.
Yeah.
In the Vedas, right. That your thoughts, your words also, depending, you know, if you called somebody a name, it wouldn't be such, wouldn't be that, you wouldn't necessarily get karma for that. Your deeds, for sure, you'll get karma for.
That's the question.
You see, in a higher yuga, you're going to get karma for your thoughts, words, and deeds.
Yeah, that's right, it's easier to collect it.
In the Iron Age, Kali Yuga, generally just for your deeds, your actions.
Shows how lost we are.
Totally.
Well, the whole thing about having to write everything down.
Yeah, exactly.
Using information here.
And like, yeah, the phones.
I can't remember numbers.
No, they can't even remember a number.
Now we have an astrology, you know,
yeah, you
software to put in, to calculate everything.
We don't need to use them.
Yeah, when I first learned, there was no computer.
Oh, okay.
I tell you. Yeah, it was a lot of calculating to do. Back in the old days, when I was young. Yeah, so. The blessing of the age of Kali, the Iron Age, is that because the interest in religion and spirituality has diminished so tremendously, God makes it real easy. You can actually get off the wheel of repeated birth and death faster, easier now than ever before. That's the blessing. But even so, people don't want to do it. But it's easier than ever. When Chaitanya and Nityananda came as incarnations of Vishnu 500 years ago, they inaugurated this Sankirtan movement, which was to chant the holy names of God. You can chant many mantras, there's many, many mantras, but the names of God are the most potent and purifying because God is absolute. So it will have the greatest effect in the quickest amount of time to get you where you're going, to cleanse the mind from the sangskaras, the negative sangskaras, or impressions. Cleanse the mirror of the mind.
Is that the Vishnu Sahasranama?
Well, Vishnu Sahasranama is, yeah, in other names of Vishnu. Yeah.
But also, it's the quality of your chant.
Yes.
So, that has...
Yes. If you're chanting and you're thinking about which, you know, I have to go over to the Tesco and I need to buy some
chocolate.
Yeah, I need to buy some chocolate. I got my grocery list. So if that's what's on your mind, then you know.
Maybe you'll remember to buy the chocolate.
You're supposed to be thinking about the you're listening to the sound and focusing on it. I mean, it's just like your yoga and your meditation. Are you paying attention, or are you off with the fairies? Any questions, comments on what's been said?
I just wanted to ask you a question. So, after your experience with astrologers, would you never go back now to one? Has that kind of...
No, but like I was never into it. So my sister was. But then after she passed away, I just was like, I don't see any point. It just convinced me that it's going to benefit me.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, this is what I tell people. It's less about the system itself, or the discipline, or the service. For example, you say, I want to have massage, whatever, Swedish massage, Thai massage, whatever. So this person says, I do Swedish massage. You go to this person, and you come out, how was your massage? It's terrible. It's awful. Would you go back to this person? No. So, do we say Swedish massage is garbage in the bin? Do we say that? I had one Swedish massage. It was the worst thing I ever had. It's not that. It's the person. It's always the person. Markandeya, who doesn't do massage, is the best guy, one of the best masseurs on the planet. This I know, because I've had massage from him. But he doesn't do massage. He's very, very good. I'm just using that as an example, but I didn't think. And then I thought about him when I'm telling you. So I don't tell people to go to Vedic astrology. It's the person you go to. It's always the person. You go to your hairdresser to get your hair cut or done or colored or whatever you do. You go to this person, and once you find a good one, guess what? Same one over and over again. You don't start looking somewhere else, roll the dice, take a chance. Correct? This guy came to see me years ago. He was a very successful man. You know, he had money. I knew he was a success. We talked about it. I did a chart for him. This is in L.A. He says, I'm going to see this other guy tomorrow. And the other guy, I knew the other guy, and he was learning astrology. But that wasn't the issue. The issue was, I knew exactly what this other guy would do because I saw his chart before. I wouldn't go to this guy if he was the last astrologer on the planet. And I knew that this guy is a fault finder. And he's envious, which means he's going to point out all your negatives. And especially if one of the temptations for people who first get into astrology is you're going to see all these people's charts, and the first thing you're going to do is you're going to compare them with your chart. This guy's got a way better chart than I do. Oh, look at this one's chart. This guy's a jerk and he's got a way better chart. How could that be? That's not fair. It's the ego reacting, you see. And this guy that I'm telling you about, he would be like that. He would be jealous. You can't continue to do astrology unless you begin to understand that you cannot compare apples and oranges. Your chart is your chart. You have your strengths and weaknesses. Someone else has theirs. And if I'm projecting my stuff on you and I'm trying to help you, I'm not helping you. It's not about you. It's about me. And that is of no value and of no service to you whatsoever. Okay? So, the wealthy guy goes to see this other character. He says, look, I'll call you and let you know how it goes. I said, yeah. Give me a call. Right? So you're seeing him tomorrow. Excuse me. 2 weeks go by. Never hear from the guy. Finally, he calls. Hey, man, how's it going? I should go. How about you? Oh, I've been down, man. I've been down. So what happened? Oh, I haven't gone out of my house 2 weeks. I said, what happened? I went to see so-and-so. Yeah, I know. I said, how'd it go? Well, that's why I haven't gone anywhere. I've been so depressed. What? I said, what did he tell you? He said, I didn't even know if... And this is a wealthy guy, right? I didn't know if I'd be able to afford the gun to shoot myself with. Those were his words. I'll never forget. I didn't know if I'd be able to afford to buy the gun to shoot myself with. Now, what kind of service did that guy, that Vedic astrologer, do? Tell me. That's not a service. That's a disservice. It's not Vedic astrology. It's always the person. Everything is personal. Everything is personal. That's why in bhakti yoga, it's all personal. The yoga of love and devotion is, it's a relationship between you and God. It's personal. You can't have a relationship with energy. There's no reciprocation. You can only have a relationship with a person. A loving, reciprocal exchange. Everything's personal. Everything in our world is personal. Because there's always somebody behind it. No matter what it is, there's a person behind it. When you see something that's beautiful, like a piece of art, painting, whatever, there is a person who did it. A person that painted it. There was somebody who expressed the beauty up on the canvas or wherever, and you went, oh my God. I mean, this house is full of beautiful art, for example. I was talking to my wife today on FaceTime. She goes, oh my God, what is that painting mean? I said, oh, you want to see paintings? Yeah. Boy, that's a lovely place. So it's all personal. Yes, please.
I've not ever had a reading or don't know much about astrology. I probably in many ways stayed away from it because I was always afraid of a reading becoming some kind of self-fulfilling prophecy for me. It might mess with my head. What is the main purpose then, and what is it? Because you were saying in this example it was a disservice to this particular man. So what is it that people hope to gain from it, and how does one then use it constructively and positively and not in a way to fuel their angst or their anxiety or their depression?
Astrology, your astrological chart, your birth chart, your horoscope, shows your karma. It's a map of your karma. It shows your strengths, your weaknesses, your challenges. It shows the major lessons that you are here to learn in this lifetime. It shows exactly how your karma is unfolding in terms of the schedule. It's all there. Now, we can say, yes, but it's not a physical science. It's a divine science. And it says in the Brihat Parashara Hora Shastra, Jiva Nang Karma Falado Graha Rupi Janardana. Janardan, God, takes the form of the planets. Graha Rupi, in order to give to the living beings their karmic results. So, when you look at an astrology chart, it's an open secret. It's open because all the information is there. It's a secret because it requires interpretation. Why wasn't it just spelled out clearly? Because you can't spell out mystical sciences clearly, because then they'd be available to the masses who would exploit them and manipulate people using those sciences, those methods. So it's an open secret. You have to be given. It's not just knowing the science, it's divine grace. that gives you the ability to do it in some meaningful way that makes a contribution to people's lives, as opposed to cuts the legs out from under them, because that makes you feel better. So the idea is to help you to understand more clearly who you are, what you've come from, what's on your agenda this lifetime, if you don't already know. There's two kinds of clients that come. The ones that know nothing, have no idea. And the ones who, when you finish, they go, I knew all that. Good. But you've given me a whole fresh perspective on it. Even better. You've helped me see it in an objective manner that I myself cannot see my life, because I can only look at my life subjectively. That's the reality. So, again, I say it's about choosing the right person to interpret it for you. I do not believe astrology is a self-fulfilling prophecy, but I do know there are people who obsess. A thought is planted in their heads and they just obsess about that thing. I suppose if you obsessed about something long enough, you could effectively manifest it. I don't think there's any doubt about it, because we are creative beings. We can manifest all kinds of things in our lives.
You will it to happen,
or your fear of it happening will draw it to you. One way or the other, it's a meditation, isn't it? You keep meditating on it. Whether it's a positive or negative meditation, it's still meditation. You attract to yourself what you focus on. How's it go? Something flows where attention goes.
Energy
flows where attention goes. That's it. So if you're really susceptible, then, and you think you're going to obsess about something, then I'd say either A, don't get your chart done. Save yourself the obsession or the impact. Or B, find the right person.
Yeah. But
I like to say it like this.
Yeah, how would you...
You use astrology. You don't let astrology use you. You know, it's a tool. Do you walk around with a hammer all the time? Why would I walk around with a hammer all the time? Well, in case you need a hammer something. Well, I don't pick up a hammer unless I'm ready to hammer something. Other than that, I put it back down. Same with astrology. People say to me, do you look at your chart every day? No. Do you know where the moon is today? I say, well, I have a general idea, but not necessarily. Why aren't you wondering what you're going through? No, I don't think like that all the time. When I meet people, especially people whose charts are done, they go, oh God, you're seeing through me, right? Well, Mom, what are you seeing? What are you seeing as you look at me? Look, I'm not switched on all the time, okay? I'm just like a person. You know, I see your check shirt and your nice red scarf. What do you want me to see? Oh, I thought you were reading me. Oh, I felt like, no, man. Sorry.
And also, you know, from like my experience, the value of it was to confirm or to understand better the soul's purpose. Because once the soul is aligned, or life is aligned towards the soul calling, all of the material stuff like timing of jobs and the right job just comes into place. That's the deeper thing that you need to understand, really, from it. And then the rest of it, like where shall I move, where shall I go living, whatever, just will happen.
Yeah, it's really about becoming in sync with your own life. You know, do you have to consult an astrologer to be in sync with your life? No, absolutely not. Lots of people, lives are going along just swimmingly. They haven't consulted anybody because they're in sync. You know, like I told you, there's only two groups of clients. One of them, they already know it all. But we're human. We have self-doubt. we question. So then you have somebody who's a perfect stranger, like me, tell you all the things you're feeling down deep in your heart. Wow. I guess I was, you know, I was in tune. I was in sync, but now I'm going to let it happen. Because it is there. I wasn't imagining it. That's very, very valuable.
I think people do it for reassurance.
Yeah. What is that worth? That's priceless. It is priceless. If the connection is made, and it's enough to motivate you to do what you need to do.
Remember you mentioned a long time ago about Paul McCarthy and Heather Mills, you know, she let him wait a little bit longer.
Well, that's the custom here. You know, the bride keeps the groom waiting at the altar, right? You know that.
Yeah, when they kind of stuck or something, right, in the church. Or...
Yeah.
No, they drive around the block a few times.
She has to, you know.
Why?
Yeah, why?
It's nonsense. But that's what they do here in this part of the world. Yeah. Ireland, UK, that's what they do. It's some little girl game that they play. But, of course, they don't calculate the time of the vivaha, the wedding. So, yeah, that wedding in particular was not calculated by any Vedic astrologer I know.
But this is where I question it, right? So I married a Brahmin. I'm a Sikh. And my mother-in-law came out with a date based on our charts. But we just got married on a Sunday morning, like all Sikhs do. And I don't think that... That's what I think. My marriage is absolutely fine. And I don't know necessarily if you have to get married at that time, at that particular day, because somebody is telling you to, it's a secret to a happy married life. Many marriages who they followed that time and that auspicious whatever break down.
Correct. So. Correct. You're absolutely right. I will answer that for you. How to say this nicely?
You can say it in a not nice way.
No, I cannot. I'm not able.
Do it with the right intentions. And I think if the intentions are right, things fall in place. I do not need to be married to my husband who I love dearly on a particular time to love him for the rest of my life.
You see, look, then again, it's an incident and coincidence as well. It's the energy that particular time could be meant to be. Right, it doesn't mean that that particular time, that could be better, but that could be also better as well.
No, but the intentions have to be right. The timing has to be incidental.
But then I think the most people who got married, their intentions were right in the first place. That's why they got married.
My experience has been that the vast majority of calculations that come from pundits in India are useless. They don't understand the science or how it works. So when they say they're giving you a good marriage time, they're not. They don't know. They pick one thing. You know, if there's 21 factors to determine good marriage, they pick one or two, and they ignore the other 19. And yes, it is a good date. It's no problem. And they get married on that day, and then the marriage doesn't work. And then there's, of course, astrology is bogus. No, astrology's not. He isn't. He's bogus. He doesn't know what he's doing, but he's pretending he knows what he's doing. Yeah. The family priest knows all these things. I doubt it. Maybe back in the day. Yeah. Not now. I've seen countless examples of it. Marriage times work. Okay. Why is it important? Can you get married without a marriage calculation, time, date? Yeah. Is your attention enough? No. It's not enough. I, as a farmer, can say, my intention is to plant a wonderful crop, and I will get a wonderful crop. Watch and see. I'm going to plant in December, and I'm going to get this great crop. Kind of hard to dig the ground because it's frozen, but I'm going to do it. Wait and you see how wonderful my crop will be. Because my intention is good. That's that won't work because the timing is wrong. It's not in sync with the universe and the seasons. So universal influences are there, whether you believe they're there or not.
Well, they're definitely there, but I'm saying that there are a lot of marriages which work, which didn't get married according to the auspicious time.
No.
So.
Marriage is also a product of karma. So if two people have good marriage karma, then they're going to get married and they're going to have a wonderful marriage. And if you would calculate after the fact when they got married, you're going to find a wonderful marriage chart.
Yeah.
And they got that because they had karma for it. They didn't have to consult somebody. So from that point of view, I could agree with you. But I can show you so many failed marriages from people who didn't get married at the right time. I just had an example of my student calculating marriage chart for these people in December, and somebody else looked it over and said, oh, you can't get married on that, that's an Ekadashi, that's the 11th lunar day, you can't get married on an Ekadashi, that's Vishnu's sacred day. So, you know, this guy wasn't even in the action, he's just some other guy who does Vedic astrology and lives in Eastern Europe. So they said, oh, well, we can't get married on this. That's like, it's not even an issue. In terms of doshas or flaws, it's so minimal. Right? So then the guy gave him a different time. And he put Venus in. Venus is love, marriage, especially for a relationship and marriage. Venus' disposition is the most important. So then he puts Venus together with Saturn in the sky. And he has them married. We said nothing. My student said nothing. I said nothing. What are you going to say? That's their karma, right? So then I saw the couple months and a half after. I said, so, congratulations. You got married. How's it going? Oh, there's a lot of adjustments to make. They're both like, you know.
See the guy?
No, it's both of them. It's both of them. Okay. Thank you so much. We never end at 8:30, do we? Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for coming. It's important to get together and just have these sessions like this.
Om Tat Sat, Hare Krishna.